Hey, it's 8 o'clock Central Time on Wednesday night if you're watching live, and that means whatever time it is where you are, it's Ham Nation time. We've got a full show. Another Gordo Pop Quiz. We'll have the 109th birthday of Cliff Cahart, W4KKP, and a great story about the war and what he did to help us win. World War II, we're talking about. We're going to solder some power poles. The radio station KDKA, the first broadcast station in the world, I believe, will celebrate their 100th anniversary with a ham radio special event. George revisits a speaker project that you're going to love, especially the shirt. Amanda has chat. We've got Newsline and Dr. T and you and everybody else, and it's going to be a great time. So sit back and enjoy yourself, because here comes Ham Nation. Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether employees are working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. This is Ham Nation, episode 474 for October 14th, 2020, the 109th birthday of W4KKP, the oldest living ham.
Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID, and I'm here with all my buddies and more so on Ham Nation, and I'm glad you're here. We have got such an important show. I know they're all important, but you're going to see in a second just how important this is. We got some great people. Gordo is here. Gordo, you okay today?
Hey, I'm fine. All the fires are slowly getting put out by hardworking firefighters here in California. So that's the great news, Bob.
That's good. Well, we're going to come back to you in just a little because you got some stuff going on. Amanda is here. She's in the wings getting set up for all of the chat room folk to give her some questions and some other things that's going to happen. George is here, but he's got his soldering iron a little cold, so he's warming it up, though. So stick around because things get good when he gets there. We're going to have a really special interview with Bob, W3CO. Don's going to talk to him about the 100th anniversary of KDKA. And for all of you that are big-time listeners of AM radio, there you are, KDKA. And Don's got a great interview with him. I'm really excited about that. Don, are you with us, Don? You ready to go?
I am. I'm excited about this. KDKA, for those of you who don't know, is the very first licensed broadcast radio station in the United States. So it's number one, and it's still going. And we're going to take a peek into not a tale from the transmitter site, but a look back into the history of the early days of broadcasting. I'm excited about that. We have Dr. T with Solar and the Newsline crew with Newsline. So, yeah, we got a full show tonight.
Okay. Well, as I said, I want you each of you to just spend a little time here. There's something very special. Today is the birthday of Cliff Cahart. Cliff is the oldest living ham radio operator, and he's still on the air. He's had a little tough time here in the last few weeks, but today is his 109th birthday.
Wow.
109. Check it out. And Cliff is such a wonderful guy, and he's really with it. A few years back, I spent some time with him, and I couldn't believe he's just such a vivacious guy. He's on the air every day. But he has a very special story. And his story was, he was the radio operator that the general said, go to Iwo Jima in secret and build the radio station, so when we capture the island, we'll be able to talk to San Francisco, China, and the Pentagon all at the same time. Now, understand this, guys and gals. He had to do this in the dark. He had to do it in a trench so nobody could see what they were doing, and he did it. There's his radio station. They built his Quonset hut. Now, you notice it's down below ground level because the Japanese were still fighting us. I mean, there are bullets going over his head, people getting killed. And he said, they gave me a lineman that during, you know, their day before they got drafted, these guys were able to put up telephone poles. Well, those are the guys that they put on his staff to put up a rhombic, a couple of rhombics, and he could point things to where he needed them. Here is the sadness part of it. You'll notice there is in front, this camera was in the pit because they had to do this so nobody could see them. Otherwise, they'd shoot them. And they were putting up these poles at his radio station, and there they were in the pit fighting while these guys are building the station. And it just, if you don't know the history of Iwo Jima, you might want to check it out. I didn't know it until I visited with him. And it's just such a sad thing when you know that all of this was going on. So what I want to do here, while we see this wonderful flag over Iwo Jima, I want everybody that's hearing my voice, we're going to take a few seconds of pause, and I want to say a prayer for Cliff, because a few weeks ago he attracted COVID. I understood from his doctor yesterday that he's doing okay, better. But let's take a little time and let's put him in our prayers, please. So let's bring up all of our host, if you can, from the studio, and let's bow our heads and let's say a prayer. Amen. Cliff is the guy. Cliff is the guy. And I appreciate all of you doing this. But I'm going to end my little segment here by doing something really special for him. Stand by.
Happy birthday, Cliff.
Happy birthday.
Happy, 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 happy birthday. Absolutely the greatest American I have ever met. And he's an amateur radio operator. So that's the story of Cliff. And I would like each of you, real easy to do, go into QRZ and look up his call and send him a card. I would love for you to do that, and I know that he would accept the great thing that we're all going to do for him. So keep him in your prayers, and let's see where we go from there. But I do hope that he makes it through this crazy pandemic. He's doing well. The last few days, he's gained some strength, so that's good. Thank you, Hugh. He's his doctor, and he's also a ham. So I want to move on to our guest, one of the several tonight, and that's Jerry, N8KLX, in the spotlight of the club. The club is kind of special, and I did a presentation for them. And in doing that, I discovered that he has a very special way of doing something. So, Jerry, how are you doing tonight? You doing good?
I'm fine. You sure gave me a tough act to follow, though.
Oh, well, that's okay. We're all hams.
Yep.
We're all equal. Yeah. Well, I saw this article in the newsletter of the club. And what's the club?
USECA, Utica Shelby Emergency Communications Association.
Exactly. Yeah. We had a really fun time. But I caught this thing in the a piece that you had written in the paper about something that had something to do with these guys. A very special way of doing power poles. Tell us just a little bit. I got some pictures, but how'd you get into doing that? Probably like the rest of us, you hated crimping, right?
Yeah, I do have a crimping tool, and there are times when it's what I should use, and I do. What I found, though, is if you're doing smaller gauge wire, the crimping tool doesn't always make a good, solid mechanical contact so that you could sometimes pull the wire out. So I decided that I would start soldering them. And I don't know anyone who's tried to solder a power pole connector when you're just have it on your workbench. You chase the thing around on the on your workbench until you get frustrated, burn your fingers, and decide to go do something else. So
I like to chase around. That was good. That was good. Well, here, I'll show the first picture. You can tell us what we got here.
Well, I decided that there had to be a better way, and I made myself a very simple fixture. That's just a chunk of plywood, maybe 6 inches tall, 8 inches wide, something like that. Found it scrapped in my garage. And as you can see, I glued a couple of mini clothespins onto it. The one on the right is actually holds the contact, and the one on the left holds the wire. And it holds everything steady, so you can make a solder joint. What you see there is the power pole contact being held by the clothespin. And it's just about a perfect fit. And it makes it, holds it very, very well. And then, as you can see, the wire comes, you put the wire in, and you really, really, really should tin the wire before you go to try and solder it into that connector. If you don't tin it, it's a whole lot more difficult, easier to screw it up. So, yeah, you tin the wire, and then you put use the left-hand clothespin to hold the wire in the contact. Now, you'll notice the wire's not fully seated into the barrel of the contact. The reason for that is that you want a place to be able to put the tip of your soldering iron to heat the joint and be able to flow the solder into the connector. So, yeah, there's a little bit of a gap there. And you want to make sure you get it good and hot so that you don't have a cold solder joint. And I found out that the indicator of when you've put enough solder into the joint is you see that little seam at the top of the barrel. When you see solder start to come up into that, you're done. Let That's it cool great. Off, and it does take some time to cool off. Because if you move it right away, you'll get a cold solder joint, and life will be horrible. But it's a real simple fixture, and you might wonder where I got the mini clothespins. Those are not full-size clothespins. They're itty-bitty. I got the first ones I used in a kit, a wooden kit from for Leo Dinard. Leonardo da Vinci inventions. And they use those little clothespins as clamps. But I also was able to research, and if you go to Michael's craft store, they carry them. They have them on a hook.
And there you go.
Like a dozen of them in a bag for $3. So.
Wow. Well, that's really super. And then you just got to get out your soldering iron and make it happen, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's such a great idea. Hey, Gordo, are you still with us? You're a powerful guy. What do you think about that, Gordo?
Well, what I like most about that is the clothespin holding the power pole pin will keep solder from balling up on the pin itself. Sometimes we have a great connection, but a little bit of solder comes out the other end, gets on the pin itself, and then no way would you ever be able to get it into the socket. So, Jerry, great idea.
That's wonderful.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was a how should I say, an unforeseen benefit of using that, and truthfully, it works really well to keep the solder from going up the tab.
That's great. What a wonderful idea. This is what Ham Nation's all about: bringing you these great ideas from us that we sometimes don't know how to do it. One thing that I love to do, but a lot of people sometimes don't know this, but power poles have a male and a female. It gets hard to see some of this time, but if you look at the power pole, it has, this is a female. You look at the other side, there's the male and there's the female. And why you want to do that? Because they will slide together and you can mount them and you got a real secure plus and minus. And a lot of guys don't know that. Every once in a while I get to do it at teachings and with clubs and do things and it's like, wow, I didn't know that. So, hey, Jerry, thank you for being here with us. Bring us some more. You probably got all kinds of stuff in your workbench. So bring us some more goodies like that. I appreciate it. And greetings to you, sir. What a great club you have. And we'll see you back here again soon. You'll come up with something. I appreciate being.
Yeah, there are other things in the workbox that could prove useful.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
that. My pleasure.
So there we go, Gordo. We just dig into people's toolbox and their workbench and look what we come up with. Make things better for you and I, right?
Boy, that's for sure, Bob. Well, Bob, you know, the focus is on instructors during this pandemic. They've been doing such a great job teaching ham radio via Zoom, or some have well-distanced classes. And we've had so much requests for the CD that instructors have that have all of the audio sounds off the air that they can play folks taking a class. And this comes from the W5YI group, W5YI.org. And the W5YI.org finally said, Gordo, let's go ahead and release the three CDs, one for technician, one for general, and one for extra, with all of your on-the-air CDs for free download to everyone, not just instructors, but everyone. It's been a huge success. And if you've not downloaded them, a great way to play the sounds of ham radio with some narration that I give, go to w5yi.org and go to their main page. Left-hand column, it says download audio on the air. And you'll find that it'll really help out in teaching. Well, I thought tonight we would finish up with our on-the-air quizzes. And so far, Ray Novak, N9JA, and a few others on the chat room are way up there in identifying these sounds. So get ready. Here comes our first sound. And for those of you that have been a long-time ham, you realize what a thrill it is to make contact with a station that has a unique call sign. And then after it's all over, going,
Oh, my God. You know who I just talked to? Well, you tell me. Who are we listening to right here?
Juliet Yankee 1. Juliet Yankee number 1. Whiskey Bravo 6. November Oscar Alpha. Please come in again.
There you go. And I hope you can spell the last name and be sure and get the correct first part that goes with it. But JY1, no, you don't have time to look it up in the QRZ. Just go for it now and see what you have. Last week, we talked about Aurora, and Aurora is a fascinating mode for CW. But can you imagine a voice coming over Aurora from all the way from Barcelona? Take a listen, and you tell me, he's got a stack of antennas. What's in the stack? How many stacks does he have? And he'll tell you, listen carefully, Aurora, when I was in Alaska, all the way to Barcelona. Wow. You tell me exactly how many of the monoband Yagis he had, and that'll be your second correct answer. New hams coming up on high frequency with the great ICOM rigs automatically have things happen. But some of the older ham rigs, when you went from one band to another, you had to make sure and get this one right, because if you didn't get it right, this is what you would sound like. So what is the problem here? Wow, did you figure that one out? Yeah, well, luckily, all the new rigs, great ICOM rigs, do this automatically for you. But if you've ever tried to get a new ham to tune someone in on sideband, they just don't have success, well, you can gently tell them what the deal was. Well, when we go back, maybe 20 years, here was a contact that everybody wanted to make. And we all wanted to be the first one to make contact. So take a listen, and then your answer is going to be, what was the conveyance that this operator was on? Take a listen.
We're approaching the California coast at this time, and I'll be tuning the band for the next 90 seconds to receive calls for W5LN Bell. I am now calling CQ for other stations, calling W5LFL.
Okay, did you get that? Yeah, you remember where W5LFL was calling from, and he was the first one to do it, especially in that specific craft. Well, when we give RST, R for readability, S for signal strength, T for tone, sometimes we add something to it when a station has a signal that sounds like this. So the question is, what would be the RST? Well, you tell me. yeah, okay. We're missing one thing. If we were to give them, let's say, a 579 or a 599, what's missing on that report? And here's another RST report. I'm not sure if this was George trying to work his new HF radio homebrew, missing a very vital component, but it was distinctive. Take a listen. Oh, wow. That was, that one. So what would that report be with the RST-3 number system? Well, you know, some of my fun teaching times have been in convalescent homes or going to those ham radio operators that maybe suffered some sort of an ailment and getting them on the air. And even sometimes they laugh when they listen to what I recorded when they were doing their call on the 10-meter band for calling all stations. So, for all you medical experts, what do you think the condition that would lead to this? And again, this ham, good-natured hat, laughed and laughed and
calling. Laughed. QC10, 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 QC10 meters in Standing Rock.
Okay, well, yeah, that will do it every time if you have that specific ailment, but this ham overcome it. You know, that's a neat thing about ham radio. No matter what the handicap may be, there are no handicaps in ham radio. I've seen hams with almost no hearing and no eyesight, and they pound out CW. They put their hand over the speaker to feel the vibrations, and they're at 40 and 45 words per minute, much faster than I can do. All right, let's go to the bottom of the band, even below 2,200 meters. And you know, many of the new rigs from ICOM America go all the way down to those new low power bands. But if you went beyond the very lowest ham band, you might hear these. And it's a one word answer. What are we listening to with a very low frequency converter? Wow. Did you get those? Yeah, the little whatever those were. There's a technical word for them. And thanks to Mother Nature, they're usually there. So get up in the middle of the night, get away from any power lines, and take a listen. Ham Radio Part 97 says that in an emergency, this is where ham radio really shines. That's one of our ham radio responsibilities is emergencies. What has caused this emergency in a foreign country? And we have a relay from George. Take a listen.
Okay, relay message from 4CR7 Victor Kilo to Mike Zero X-ray Alpha Tango Break. Sri Lanka reports 31,000 casualties with ocean waters covering all southern and eastern coastlines. The estimate is 800,000 homeless and in need of medical supplies. Ham radio operators need it immediately with high-frequency radios. No other communications than ham radio at this time. End the message.
For tomorrow, we have the Great Shakeout, and the Great Shakeout is really going to underscore the importance of ham radio when we get messages through that people wouldn't think would get through because phone lines are down, internet is down, everything's down, but not ham radio. So be prepared tomorrow morning, you West Coasters, 10:15 on 10:15 for the Great Shakeout and ham radio in action. Finally, here comes a ham radio operator to say how much fun ham radio is. You tell me, where do you think this operator was located? And he won't give you his location. You just have to figure it out.
Yeah, the best part of ham radio, Gordon, is the people that you meet in the hobby. There is no other radio station that has the satisfaction of having meeting new people and making new friends that I can think of either.
Isn't that the truth? And think of Cliff, 109 years old. Cliff, we all salute you and happy birthday. So, Don, probably some of those sounds you remember because you've been on the air for quite some time as well. Don?
Yeah, 25 years now this year. This is my 25th year. I think I recognize the voice of the operator on that last one. I think I know exactly who that is, and I think he's in the chat room. I could be wrong.
That'll be good. Yeah, call sign is, I have to look it up here.
That'll give it away. Don't do that. Yeah. Good stuff, Gordon. We'll be back at the end of the show to find out exactly what the correct answers are. I knew most of those, but a couple of those stymied me. So I'm interested to see just exactly what that is as well. First, let's go ahead and see if we can get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2241, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, October 14th, 2020. We begin this week with word that the Orlando Hamcation has become the latest in a long line of canceled amateur radio events around the world. Newsline anchor Jim Dameron and 8TMW has more.
The news came in a joint statement from the ARRL and Hamcation organizers on the ARRL website and on Twitter on Monday, October 5th. The annual event, which was also to be the ARRL National Convention, has been moved to February 2022. Tickets already purchased can be used for Hamcation 2022, can be donated to the Orlando Amateur Radio Club, or can be refunded. Meanwhile, the in-person event is being replaced by a variety of webinars, a CUSO party, and some prize drawings for 2021. The event in Central Florida is among the nation's largest gathering points for hams. Reported attendance for this year was 24,200 over the course of the 3 days.
In a move that was not unexpected, the U.S. Federal Communications Commission has eliminated amateur radio use on a 3.4 gigahertz band.
Amateur radio will no longer have the use of frequencies between 3.3 and 3.55 gigahertz. The FCC has acted to reallocate that portion of the spectrum for use of 5G services. Its action during the meeting September 30th is part of the broader plan to make more of the spectrum available to commercial users by eliminating secondary user allocations such as ham radio operators. Hams and other users are being relocated to a band between 2.9 and 3.0 gigahertz on a secondary basis to federal government service operators. The FCC is now seeking comment on how to sunset amateur use on 3.3 to 3.55 gigahertz and proceed with the relocation. The agency noted in a press release that its action is another move towards fulfilling a directive from Congress to free up spectrum for commercial and other purposes. The ARRL and AMSAT were among those who have spoken up against the move. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
Finally this week, it's almost time for Jamboree on the Air and Jamboree on the Internet.
Radio scouters are getting ready for the world's largest scouting event just 1 week away. Jamboree on the Air and Jamboree on the Internet on October 16th through the 18th, local times. With current COVID-19 guidelines varying from state to state and country to country, this year's event will no doubt be a somewhat of a challenge. With the guidelines in place, we have definitely seen a decrease in planned participation, and as such, we only have four call areas with reserved K2BSA call sign usage. Mark Hughes, KG4VWE, will be activating K2BSA Portable 4 in West Point, Georgia at the Chattahoochee Council Fall Family Camp. David Mulvey, K5DCM, will be activating K2BSA Portable 5 in San Angelo, Texas, with a location of to be determined. Brandon Arias, KM6WZP, will be activating K2BSA Portable 6 in Riverside, California at Mount Rubidoux. Lori Abraham and Robert Crow, KA8CDC, will be activating K2BSA Portable 8 in Wheeling, West Virginia at the Sandcrest Scout Reservation. Registration for Jota Jotai is located at jotajotai.info this year. For more information on this and radio scouting, please visit k2bsa.net. For Amateur Radio Newsline and the K2BSA Amateur Radio Association, this is Bill Stearns, NE4RD.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, Bill Stearns, NE4RD, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
Space weather this week is deceptively quiet, but don't let the quiet fool you. As we switch to our front side sun, you can see the bright regions. Look at them. Bam, 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 bam. There's four bright regions on the Earth-facing disk in Earth view right now. And look at them. They're all high latitude. This means they're all solar cycle 25 bright regions, including region 2775 that actually fired off a non-Earth-directed solar storm. It was a very small solar storm, but it fired it off to the west of us. And as you you can see, look on the east limb. There's region 2776 beginning to rotate into view. So we have yet another bright new cycle's bright region rotating into view. And as we switch to our far-sighted sun, this is Stereo A, and it's looking at the sun pretty much from the side. You can see that region 2775 as it rotates off of the Stereo's west limb. And you can see region 2776 right in the middle of Stereo's view. But that's not all. There's more. Look at the east limb in the north. Oh my goodness, yet another bright region. Might this be sunspot number 2777? Who knows? It could be. So we're going to keep our eyes on it. The nice thing is that even though we're not getting a lot of Earth-directed solar storms right now, it looks like things are pretty quiet. This is definitely boosting the solar flux. We are back up to 75, easily the mid-70s for solar flux. And with these new regions rotating into view, we may actually boost up a little bit higher than that. Hey, it looks like we're finally seeing solar cycle 25 come to life. For more details on this week's space weather, including how these new cycle bright regions are going to affect you, come check out my channel or see me at spaceweatherwoman.com.
You know, I think if we got her a few hundred more Twitter followers at Tamitha Scove, maybe we'd get her to come out of her shell a little bit. She gets so excited about the sunspots. And why not? You know, we're excited because maybe that means that we'll have a little bit more propagation. At Tamitha Scove. At Twitter, also Tamitha Scove on YouTube, and her website, spaceweatherwoman.com. Thank you, Dr. T. We appreciate that. All right, George normally does Tales from the Transmitter site. Tonight, we've got a really interesting broadcast segment about a radio station that is 100 years old, KDKA, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the very first commercial broadcast station, radio station in the country. And we've got special guest tonight, WC3O, Bob Bastone. Bob, how are you tonight? Thanks for being a guest on Ham Nation tonight. Tell us all about KDKA and the history of this landmark radio station. This is going to be fascinating.
Okay, yeah, very good. Yeah, in Pittsburgh territory, KDKA is big doings. I've always lived in Pittsburgh, and I've always listened to KDKA. And it's just, you know, just a fantastic radio station. They've had just a wonderful history. So we're celebrating that all November long. This is going to be a multi-club and individual event that folks can get in touch with me and they can participate. The only requirement that I have is that they're in southwestern Pennsylvania, where KDKA is. We have plans. I've had fantastic support from all the local hams and clubs in the Pittsburgh area that are participating in this. The North Hills Amateur Radio Club has been wonderful with getting permissions to operate from one of the original KDKA sites where they had their shortwave station, W8XK, in Saxonburg, Pennsylvania, a little bit north of Pittsburgh. And as well as the possibility of operating at another site in East Pittsburgh where KDK once existed. And we've had a lot of help from KDK's engineer, Chris Hudak, with putting things together and a lot of history and information, as well as with Pete W3WC. Yeah, that's his call. Sorry. So all month long, we're going to have four call signs. K3A, K3D, and K3K, as well as a special call sign W8XK, which was, to my understanding, the call sign of KDK's experimental shortwave station. And these four call signs are going to be out there all November long. And if somebody works all four stations, you can get a certificate. And the graphic arcs. Graphic arts people at KDKA themselves did the work on the QSL cards. As you flashed them there, they did a beautiful job. So, like I said, this is a multi-club event. KDKA has a wonderful and rich history and is a part of all of us in Pittsburgh, part of growing up here listening to KDKA. So I'm not sure what the future of the AM broadcast band is, but KDKA was a leader in this all along, and there are historical markers around Pittsburgh, various places that are important to the development of the station as where they are now. And we look forward to talking to everybody on the air. I've gotten a lot of good response. There's a lot of people that around the country and around the world that listen to KDKA and have a lot of great memories of KDKA in the past. And hopefully they have a bright future. Back to you, Don.
Yeah, such a rich history of the radio station itself. And I'm really glad that the folks over at Intercom, the parent company of KDKA, are getting behind this and helping you design the QSL card. Are they making any mention of this on the air at KDKA, or do you know?
As far as I know, they're not yet. The possibility of that still exists, though.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, because that's fascinating. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I believe there's a possibility that there's going to be an on-the-air broadcast talking about what we're doing.
Yeah, it would be a perfect tie-in, because you know that they're doing something for their 100th birthday on the air, and this would be a big part of it. Very cool. Is there a QRZ page that we can go to get the information?
I'm recommending that people go to the QRZ pages when the event is going on. And also, Pete W3WC has put together a website, www.kdka100.org. And it's still in development, but he's got a lot of great pictures and historical information. He's done a fantastic job on that. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm going to try and work all four of those stations. I mean, I'm a broadcaster. I've been in broadcasting for 40 years or so, and a little over. And I knew when I was 10 years old that I was going to be a broadcaster. I told my parents that I was going to be one of the voices coming out of their radio. And radio has been such a huge part of my job, both professionally and as a hobby and an avocation, that this just checks all the boxes for me. I'm very excited about this. And it's going to be the entire month of November, you say, right?
That is correct.
Very good. Give us the call signs again, and we'll see if we can show that QSL card again, because that's a cool card.
Yeah, it's way cool. The K3A, K3D, and K3K, as well as W8XK.
Well, that is great. Bob, is there anything else you'd like to fill in the blanks on? Anything that we've missed, or anything else we need to know about? Oh, this is great. Look at all these old pictures of the old KDKA stuff. This is just amazing.
If you look at their hats, Don, they're all call signs, 8 and whatever, you know, before there was a W or A before them. Those were all radio amateurs involved with KDKA.
Well, you know, there's so many things come from amateur radio. I mean, that you really kind of take for granted. And broadcasting, of course, springs to mind as probably the most ubiquitous. You know, the hams have always been the experimenters, and the experiments, when they work out, they turn into something that is commercial and that is widespread. So, this is very cool.
Yeah, look at the telecommunications industry today, and it's pretty where it started right there.
Yeah, so. It really is. You know, that experimenter spirit has not died either. I mean, there are people out there still making strides towards future breakthroughs in communications, and it all comes from what amateur radio hobbyists and experimenters do. So this is a great way to commemorate that and honor that, Bob. Thank you so much for this.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having us on, and we look forward to working you on the air. Get your certificates.
Yeah, by the way, looking forward to it as well. Yeah.
W8XK was also one of the bonus stations for the PAQSO party this last weekend there. So, and if you work them, send away for their current QSL card, which is not the same as the one you saw here. They had a card made up that's a dead nuts ringer for the original W8XK QSO card back in the day. So if you work them during the PAQSO party, you'll get that one. If you work them during the month of November, you'll get the KDKA one. So make sure you get both.
That is great. We hope you'll come back towards the end of November after the special event is over and give us the final tally on the contacts. And I hope you guys run out of cards and have to print more. That's just that's amazing.
We're looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bob Bestone, WC3O, all about the KDKA and the 100th anniversary of that radio station and the special event to commemorate it. Thank you, Bob. We appreciate you being on tonight.
Thank you very much.
All right. Excellent. Great segment. Now let's turn it over to George, and we'll see what he's got going on after we hear a word from ICOM.
Okay, Don. Yeah, that was an interesting story there. 100 years. You know, you said you had been on or in radio for over 40 years. I was thinking, man, I think I've been on longer than Don has. And I just did some calculations. And yes, I won't say how many years, but
well, let's the just end say of I'm, I graduated high school in 1978, and it was after summer was over, and I came back. I spent my the summer of 78 in Fresno, California, visiting family and talking to every disc jockey on the request line that would give me half a second. And most of them, when I told them I wanted to get into radio, they all said, "Why? Don't do it." I always responded, "Well, if it's such a crappy job, why aren't you doing something else?" And none of them had a good answer for me. But yeah, when I was 10 years old, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And thankfully, towards the end of 78, first part of 79, because the FCC lost my license, you didn't have to take the third class anymore. It was a restricted radio telephone operator's permit. I applied for it twice because they lost the first one. And then I got two of them in the mail. So I actually had two of the restricted radio telephone operators licenses. And now God knows where they are now. They're in some book and some long lost transmitter site now, probably. But yeah, it's radio has just been a huge part of my life. So yeah, 42 years now in broadcasting, over 2/3 of my life.
I went on the air in 72 when I was a junior in high school. So yep. I'll let you do the math, but I'm not at 50 years yet, but boy, it just hit me. I'm approaching it. So,
you're getting close.
Getting close. We'll be back in just a moment because I've got something I want to show you that, it's a project I did some time back, and we'll take a look at it. And I'll talk about how that project is working out for me today. But first, let's get a message from the folks who made this right here, ICOM.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. Now shipping. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers in a portable package covering HF 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo or just over 2 pounds. With RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz, 5-watt battery operation with BP272 or 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions, a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, and live band scope with waterfall, micro USB connector, Bluetooth, and wireless LAN, integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger, micro SD card slot for data storage. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRPP operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for soda activations or just a day in the park. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios.
And ICOM invites you to enter to win each week after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and register to win. You might win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, you can learn how you might win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For October, that new radio is the ID4100A entry-level D-Star Mobile with Big Rig features. It's a VHF, UHF, dual-band D-Star transceiver, one band at a time. It's got an upgraded user interface for easy operation, the latest advanced D-Star technology, built-in GPS, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage. There's an optional Bluetooth port available, and there's downloadable Android and iOS apps as well. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Thanks, ICOM, for sponsoring Ham Nation all these years. And I've been telling you for several weeks we're about to give this away. Well, we're through taking entries on the contest for Amateurlogic's 15th anniversary now. And we will be drawing an entry and awarding this Friday night on our 15th anniversary episode. If you'd like to watch it, that's at live.amateurlogic.tv, 8 Central Daylight Time, 0100 UTC. We'll be giving away this great IC705, as well as the other stuff that was in the prize package, like the MFJ2289 PKG Big Ear Antenna Package, including the carry case, portable power supply from MFJ, the Heil BM17 headset, and some RG8X coax for that antenna, and a set of Forest MEMS engineers mini notebooks. So join us Friday night for that at live.amateurlogic.tv and find out if you won. Somebody's going to. Tonight, we are looking at a project, and I'm going to have to go look and see how long ago I did this. This is a speaker kit that, well, they have been a very good performer. This came from Parts Express, and it's everything you need. The cabinet is already assembled. You build the crossover and mount the components, and you've got a really nice pair of speakers. So let's take a look at that.
This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to do something that I've done before. Yes, I'm well known as a master speaker builder, but this time we're going to build one out of something besides recycled material. We're going to build the Dayton BR1 two-way reference monitor system, which is a nice kit that we got from Parts Express. Now, this kit comes with the cabinet already built, so we won't have to do any woodworking, although I believe they do have kits where you could build your own cabinets as well. But this one's already pre-built. The BR1 was designed by lifelong audio enthusiast and speaker builder Paul Holsoppel. Paul has many years of experience in designing and building high-end speakers, and he set out this time to build a low-cost system that could rival some of the high-end name brands. And the reviews I see on this kit are quite phenomenal for a $159 set of speakers. The cabinet is built out of 5/8 inch thick MDF material and has an internal volume of about 0.52 cubic feet. And it utilizes an extended base shelf alignment, and it's tuned to 38 hertz with a rear mounted port. You notice two holes here. Well, we've got one that this is for a 6.5 inch Dayton subwoofer. Now, this is a nice little speaker. It's got a rubber surround on it, not a foam surround that can deteriorate over time. And it's also got a really big magnet there. And it's an 8-ohm speaker. I'm not sure of the wattage of it, although I can probably find that out. But this will be our woofer and mount in here. For our tweeter, we've got a 1 1/8 inch silk dome tweeter. Now, this is real good for not just dispersing the high frequencies just out of the center of the speaker like a cone would, but all the way around the dome here. That means that it's easier to sit in the sweet spot of the speakers. You don't have to be right in the middle. Now, you know, with a two-way loudspeaker system like this, you've got the woofer down here, which is going to do the bass, and the tweeter up here that's going to do the treble. You also need a crossover to go with this because you don't want to send low-frequency signals to this tweeter and cause it to try to reproduce frequencies it was not intended for. It could actually damage the tweeter as well as not making it sound very nice. The same thing for the woofer. There's no reason that you'd want to send real high frequencies through a speaker like this The crossover filters it out so that only the bass frequencies go to the woofer, while the treble frequencies will go up here to the tweeter. This crossover is unique in the fact that it was designed specifically for these speakers, not just to separate the low and high frequencies, but to match the impedance of the speakers and the resonances of the cabinet as well. First, we'll mount C1, and C1 is a 6.2 microfarad capacitor. Now, this is an audio-grade capacitor, and, you know, normally when you got capacitors a microfarad or over, you're going to see a plus or a minus on here. There's none on this capacitor. This is a non-polarized capacitor, and that means that you can't put it in backwards. I'm going to use hot glue because that's what I've got handy here. We don't want these to rattle around. You know, at bass frequencies, things can jump around in that cabinet a little bit. So we'll just hot glue it here to make sure that this stays exactly where we want it. As a matter of fact, I'll hot glue all of the capacitors and resistors to the board so they don't vibrate, except for R1. R1 is a larger resistor, and it can kind of get warm during usage, so we'll mount it with it standing up a little bit off the board. Now I'll solder all the components to the board and make sure that I get a good joint there, because it's going to be a lot of shaking and rattling and rolling going on in that cabinet, and we don't want these joints breaking loose. Now the only thing that's left here are these two large inductors. But there's one other thing that we need to do here. If you'll notice, all of these terminals here are riveted into the board with brads. However, they're not soldered. So we need to take a moment and go and solder all of these while they might be making an electrical connection right now. With the vibration that's going to be going on inside this speaker cabinet, they can certainly get loose easy enough. So we want to make sure that all of these terminals are soldered to the board well. L2 is a 1.5 millihenry. It's made out of 18-gauge wire here. They've already done a nice job of winding it for us. And what we need to do is mount it to the board and solder the wires in. And we're going to hot glue it around here to, as we did the capacitors. And now we'll mount L1 to the board, but notice that we're mounting it sideways. That's so that the two inductors don't interact with each other. And a little bit of soldering on the inductors here. And now here's our two crossover boards, all ready to go into the kit. Now we need to connect all this stuff together, so we'll take the included speaker wire and cut it into 6 12-inch lengths. And then we'll put crimp terminals on each end of all the wires. Now, on speaker-level signals, the crimping should be good enough, but I had a bad experience with crimp terminals once as a child, so I'm going to solder these anyway. The instructions say that we should take a pair of pliers and squeeze down with light pressure on the end of all the terminals so that they will connect good and firm to the speakers and the crossover. Now, there's one other thing I want to show you here about speaker wire. You know, our audio signals are polarized, and we need to make sure that we are maintaining our positives and negatives on this cable so that we don't end up with a situation of having an out-of-phase speaker. Most all speaker wire are zip cord. There's a little edge right down here. I don't know that you can see it. Maybe you can. But you can definitely feel it, and that's how you can identify the two ends of the cable. Now, the next thing I'm going to do here is just mark all of these cables so that it'll be easier for me to keep up with them when I go to put them on the board. So the ribbed wire, I'm going to mark the connector here with the black Sharpie at both ends. Now we'll put a set of wires on each set of terminals here, and the ones that I have marked black, the ones with the ribs, will be the ones that I put on the positive terminals. And we want to make sure that all these fit good and tight and go all the way down. And now it's time to mount the crossovers in the box. And to do this, they also recommend glue. You could use screws, but It would be hard to screw into this material and not go through the outer side, so I agree that using some hot glue is going to be the best method. Okay, both of those are on good. So we can put this back together. And when I first saw this, I thought it was packing material, but it turns out it's actually the acoustic damping foam that's used to absorb reflections inside the cabinet to keep them off the cone of the woofer. So we need to trim it to size and install it. And now it's almost time to put the speaker in, but we don't want this vibrating against the cabinet, and we want to have a good air seal around there too. So they have supplied us here with some of this caulk bead. Now this stuff is essentially the same thing as coax seal. It is sticky. The tweeters already have a gasket around them. Oops. And if we tried to use some caulk on it, they probably wouldn't fit flush with the cabinet anymore. And at last, it's time to connect the speakers and mount them. So our positive lead is the one up marked with black here on the terminal. That goes to the red lead here on the tweeter. And the woofer, it's more or less the same way. There's a little red dot here where the positive lead goes. And I've marked my terminal here black. So that's the positive lead. Now I've got these screws in here finger tight. And it's time for the most dangerous step of this project. And that is driving these screws in. Because one slip of the screwdriver, you've put a hole through the cone. And you've wasted a perfectly good speaker. So to do this, I'm going to make sure that I've got a good sharp tip here on my screwdriver, one that doesn't have rounded off corners on it, and just try to be very careful. I'll put my fingers around it like this to hopefully prevent me from slipping. One more part to go on here. So now that I've completed the speakers, there's only one thing left to do, and that's to kick back and listen to some music and enjoy them. My first impression is these are quite good. I'm amazed at the amount of bass they have for a 6.5-inch woofer. And the top end is good and clean and not harsh.
Well, there you go. I shot that almost 8 years ago. It was November of 2012. So I've lived with those as my primary set of speakers here in my office for, 8 years. I didn't realize it had been that long. Back then, I believe I said they were $150 for the pair, for the kit. I just checked. Now they are $195. But I'm going to tell you, that is a really good set of speakers. I have been extremely happy with them. I have a 10-inch powered subwoofer connected as well. It's actually just a Radio Shack subwoofer that when they were closing them out years ago, I picked up a couple of them at a really good price. I'm only using one out here. And I've got a 100-whopper channel receiver that's powering the speakers themselves. It has been a really good sounding system. And yeah, at that size, those are near-field speakers. You want to sit fairly close to them, which is how I sit. It's right behind my desk. So, and I listen to a lot of music. I'm a musician. I work at radio stations, and I'm pretty picky about my sound, and these have just really impressed me. I like the dome tweeters particularly, and I've been using those dome tweeters for years because you don't have to sit exactly in the center to feel like you're in the sweet spot of the speakers. It kind of spreads out a little bit. My other set of speakers, for reference, I've got a pair of four-way Marantz speakers that also have a dome tweeter and a dome super tweeter, mid-range and 12-inch woofer, that I've owned since the 1970s. They are excellent sounding speakers. I don't need a subwoofer with those 12-inch woofers. It kind of puts a little kick on this one out here in the office, though. We use JBL's monitors, studio monitors at all the studios, control rooms, and production rooms at the radio stations, and they are the same basic size as the speakers we just built here. These blow them away. And I don't know how much those JBLs cost. It was a little more than these, though. So 8 years, I've been real happy with these. So there you go. If you're looking for a good kit speaker project that you'll be happy with the results, right there, the Parts Express BM1 speaker kit. Well, we've got Amanda standing by in the chat room over here to pick it up. Amanda, I know you probably have some questions for Gordo tonight with his most recent quiz here. I think I got most of those, and Don thinks he scored pretty good as well. So let's find out.
Well, people got stumped on quite a few of these, Gordo. I'm going to tell you right now. First of all, I know I was stumped on a few of them as well, and I even had the answers, and I said, I'm not hearing that. But all right, let's start with the first one. He started us off easy, right? King Hussein.
King Hussein, everybody, correct.
Everybody got that right. The 6/6/6, pretty easy. A lot of them got it correct. Maybe one incorrect one. The wrong sideband. So some of the other answers off tune. Yes, change SB. That would suffice. You could say that as well. Off frequency if LSB too low, if USB too high. And then somebody said, sounds like a ruptured duck. Well, that does suffice, but not the answer we were looking for. So this one really stumped everyone, Gordo. Everyone said the International Space Station. FM from space, space shuttle using an HT radio, space shuttle, the shuttle, space capsule. What was the correct answer, Gordo?
Columbia. W5LFL, Owen Garriott aboard Columbia, which unfortunately we lost. And Owen is silent key. But he was one of the first on that very first revolution. I was like the eighth to work him.
All right. That's amazing, by the way. Next one, the 599C. So this one got mixed in with the 591 answer. So a lot of people were answering this. I don't think a single person got this correct. So you really, the closest I saw was 559C. Others said no filtering on AC. Go ahead, Gordo.
Yeah, no, the hum was 591 for tone.
Okay, spark gap transmitter, bad filter cap were some of the other answers there. Dyslexia.
That's true.
Dyslexia. A lot of people got that one correct. One person said CB or on 10. Oh, this one was funny. Dawn on scotch could be a true statement.
I saw that. Yeah.
I'd like to include in there maybe just simple fatigue. After you've been contesting all day long and you're CQ, 10 meters, CQ, 10 meters, and then all of a sudden you forget who you are, where you are, and it's a free-for-all. So,
hey, who of us every once in a while when we were new hams, who of us hasn't transposed letters in our call sign when we were brand new?
Oh, yeah.
I did that.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot my call sign once when I was brand new. I was like, KC5, wait a minute, who am I again?
I've done that before. The other thing a lot of people do, brand new, I'm just going to bring this out there, on their dual band HTs, they're scanning and they accidentally transmit on the wrong frequency. Lesson to be learned there. All right, the spherics. I did not have one single person type in spherics. I saw beacon, arcing, static, corona, chirping, and again, dawn after scotch.
Corona was close, but it's the spurts, and they call that spherics, down about 30 hertz, not kilohertz, 30 hertz.
All right, there you guys have it. The tsunami.
Yep.
A lot of people said hurricane, typhoon, earthquake, and then people started picking up. I think there at the end with the transmissions, they started to understand a tsunami was the end game there. And that was amazing. I've never heard that transmission before, by the way, Gordo. And I'm going to guess that was the one that happened in Indonesia back in 2005, was it?
Yeah, it was on, I think, Christmas morning. And when I got the relay, I went, what? Yep.
Staggering numbers.
That was just crazy. Just watching it on the news. And of course, I wasn't a ham back then, or nor did I even have that in my outlooks. But that was, wow, amazing that they were having ham radio transmissions about those reports. So, and then we had Australia. Australia was a pretty simple one. Only one other person said possibly New Zealand. So down under, yes, that counts. Simon during Don Scotch, another acceptable.
See, that's
answer,
what I
Andy.
Thought that was. I thought that was Simon. That sounded like Simon to me.
It does. Yeah, very much so. And maybe it was, and I got the call sign wrongs. But Australia, yep, you got it.
Yeah.
All right. So, Gordo, we got you on the line here. I just wanted to talk a little bit. We all got the devastating news as well. Our AR Newsline posted it as well. 3 gigahertz has been laid to rest. So I know there's a lot of hams out there, especially in California, with all of the mesh network systems that have been relying on this solely for a lot of their camera networks on all of these towers, along with a lot of other things. What's the outlook like out there, Gordo?
Well, we think we probably have 2 years before the FCC ultimately sunsets the Arden, the mesh networks that are so important for hams to show municipalities that they're serving, we can still keep the internet up. So probably 2 years. And, you know, gear after 2 years, it's almost time to step up. But if we step up to 5 gigahertz, who knows how long that band may stay untouched from the commission taking it away. So very important, as all hams did on the 3 gig takeover, make your responses known and let the FCC know that, yes, indeed, there are mesh networks, Arden, amateur radio emergency data networks, up and running, supporting all of the country infrastructure, especially up in the fire regions. And you and Jeff know about those in your area that rely on mesh and Arden.
Absolutely. And just in California alone, I really enjoy going to look at some of the amateur radio clubs' fire spotting cameras. And they've been pertinent in actually spotting the first initial smoke plumes and things like that. And how we couldn't get away with saying that this is an emergency communications necessary technology that we need to keep, I don't know. But, you know, if that 5G requires everything. And, yeah, a lot of other clubs and organizations are the same way, Gordo, where why upgrade to the 5 gig if that's going to be next on the hit list? So we have to wait things out right now, it looks like. But thanks for your input, Gordo. I really appreciate that. I wanted to go ahead, Gordo. You have anything else?
No, that's it. And congratulations for those that did so well. We'll have to wait and see what Ray's comments are in 9 Juliet Alpha, because he did very well on the first one, but we'll see how he did on the second one.
Absolutely. I'm going to tally these all up from last week and this week, and I'm going to have a true winner for next
all
week.
All right.
So
winner.
Wait. I can't wait. I'll have most correct answers, and I won't point out anything else other than that because there was some nosedives. But hey, you all tried, so that we really appreciate it. Thanks for participating. All right, let's go to Voices of Radio. Don, this next question is for you. KJ4CMY wants to know, where did you get your voice training from? I think it just came naturally for you, didn't it, buddy?
Yeah, it kind of did. I didn't go to school for this. It's something that I knew I always wanted to do. Like I said, I mean, from a young age, and I started hanging around the radio station, and you know, they would let me cut public service announcements every now and then, and you know, I bugged them for over the course of a couple of years during my junior and senior year in high school. Took speech in college a little bit. And took electronics in the VOTEC in high school. And the voice just kind of, you know, it's something I wanted to do. And it's kind of funny. because I grew up in Oklahoma and I had the typical Oklahoma kind of hicky redneck accent, I guess. And I'll never forget my first program director telling me, you're going to lose that accent. And I said, I am. He said, yeah, in about 3 or 4 months, you'll notice that your accent's going to be gone. And I said, it will? And he said, yeah, it will. And in about 6 months, 3 months, whatever it was, it was. And every now and then it kind of comes back. If I'm talking to some friends from Oklahoma or whatever, I can make it come back. But for the most part, it's gone and it's stayed gone. So I don't know. My wife hears it, but then again, you know, she would. But no, I don't have any formal training other than just going out and getting the job.
That's pretty cool, though, and I think you really love what you do. I wanted to put a shout out to one of our local DJs that passed away. I listened to this guy from the time I was 20 until 30, and I drove back and forth between Colorado Springs and Canyon City for most of those years, and he was our morning DJ, and he passed away. His final resting place is Arizona. He contracted COVID at 38. So to Jack Mehoff, yes, that is his radio name, from KILO. Thank you for all the great years of driving to work in the mornings for an hour. I really appreciate it. And it's just really sad to see one of your, and Don, I know that you've gone through this like a lot where you've worked with all of these DJs, but man, to have your adulthood DJ go, that was pretty shocking. And especially due to this pandemic, of course. All right.
I want to mention, while you're on that subject, I want to mention there's a guy who did mornings in New Orleans for a while. I worked with him. I didn't work with him on the show. We worked together at the same radio station. And in fact, his son is a ham now as well. His name is Wakeman Linscomb, but he didn't use that on the air. He used Gator. He was a morning jock at Q93 back in the late 80s. And Gator's a great guy, funny guy. I've got a great story about Gator that I've probably told on the air. Gator was trying to do a fundraiser for a kid who was having I believe it was a kidney transplant or something. And so if you've ever seen pictures of the Superdome, there's this big spire, big tall sign that says Louisiana Superdome on it. And they have the reader board, you know, the lights and everything. Well, that's called the pylon. He came up with a bit where he was going to go up and he was going to live in the pylon until he raised like $50,000 or whatever it was for this kid's surgery. And he said, I'm going to stay up here until we raise every penny. And for the first week or so, the donations came in and then they slowly started trickling off before he got even close to the 50K. Well, he was up there for, gosh, I want to say 5 or 6 weeks, maybe almost 2 months, living in the pylon. And we would send food up to him. He would come down basically to use a portalette, and then he'd go right back up. And he lived pretty much 24/7 in the pylon. They were trying to figure out a way when the donations stopped coming in and he was short of his goal. He didn't want to, you know, admit defeat. So they tried to figure out a way to get him down. And Wakeman came up with this idea only in New Orleans or maybe Las Vegas. He sent me to an address in the French Quarter to pick up someone after I got off the air at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was doing overnights. And I picked up this, shall we say, exotic dancer from one of the clubs on Bourbon Street and drove her to the pylon. And up the ladder she went. And at about 7:30, quarter to eight, in the middle of morning drive traffic, she's out there prancing naked on top of the pylon. And of course, traffic stops, the cops are called, and they come and they take her and him down. And that is how Gator got off the pylon. Anyway, now, that's the kind of guy Gator is. He's a great guy. He unfortunately is stricken with diabetes, and they're basically, they're cutting parts of his feet and legs off on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So keep my friend Wakeman in your prayers. That's the one favor I would ask, because he's a great guy. And he's in a bad spot right now.
Well, you know, it all started with his name Gator. You know,
but it's a great story, isn't it? Isn't it a great story?
I didn't know if the donations were going to start flowing in because she was there, or if the cops were coming. Yeah. So thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. $1 bill at a time.
All right, let's just go over some nuts real quick, like here. Let's see, we've got 20 meters on 14268. Kevin, KC7FPF, you out there? Type at me, honey. We have D-Star on 14 Charlie, and we have DMR on 31012. So I think that Kev is on 7192. Look thereabouts. You know where to find him. If he's running the net, that's where you should be. We're almost getting to that season. We're going to start going to 75 meters, I think. That'll be fun for everybody. So with that, Donnie boy, are you wrapping it up, or is it George's turn?
Oh, I don't know. We could wrestle for it. George, you want to wrestle for it? You're muted, so I'll take that as a no.
I think that was a fake mute.
You win.
George is going to hold up a sign. Sorry, my mic don't work.
And now here's John with a wrap up.
Gordon, great job on the quiz tonight. George, great to see that tie-dyed shirt. I'm afraid I'm going to have to need to touch up on my laser eye surgery now after seeing that again. But Amanda, you're a treasure as well. And great stuff with Cliff's birthday and the KDKA special event and everything else. We've had a great show tonight. And so thanks, of course, to Dr. Bob for putting us all together on this, too. So go out and support the Nets and have fun on the special events and the contesting and anything else that you do. Make some satellite contacts. Work that microwave stuff while you can. And just go out and have fun with this great hobby. And with that, for everybody who works on this show, both in front of the cameras and behind the scenes, we'll say goodnight. 7-3, we appreciate you, and we'll see you next week here on Ham Nation. Good night, everybody.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I am Ant Pruitt, host at Twit TV. Got a question for you. Have you gotten tired of how bad your photos are looking every time you post them to Instagram? Better yet, have you gotten yourself a new camera and you can't quite figure out why the images just don't look that good? Well, I have a solution for you. It's my show, Hands On Photography. Each and every Thursday, I sit down to share different tips and tricks that are going to help make you a better photographer and a better post processor. So subscribe today at twit.tv/hop to learn more.